Welcome to the graveyard. Voices from the grave.
And welcome to the Graveyard Show podcast, Voices from the Grave. I am your caretaker, and the graveyard is open. Well, welcome to the year-end show, everybody. How did we get here so quickly? Feels like we just started 2021. But I guess the farther away we get from 2020, the better it is for all of us. This year-end show is going to be devoted to outtakes from some interviews that I did this year that did not make it on their respective podcasts. And you're also going to hear some outtakes from yours truly, which I know is always popular. Something I started last year, I thought I would try again this year as well. Now, in years past, I would normally do best of shows. That was fine for then. But now I thought it was time to change it up. And I think you're going to enjoy this. So you're going to be hearing from some of my guests, Suzanne Desrochers Romero, Nathan Crooker, Maxi Contenti, Robin Block, and Ben Scrivens. But I'm going to begin with my first guest from 2021, David Weiner, who is the director of the In Search of Darkness series and the upcoming In Search of Tomorrow 1980s sci-fi documentary. Now, David's been on the show several times, but this outtake is actually from my YouTube exclusive show, Catacombs of Horror, which I'll get into more later in the program. David joined me on the first Catacombs of Horror, and we discussed what we thought best represented 1980s horror in four categories: series, director, villain, and scream queen. It was when we were talking about scream queens that David brought up a really interesting observation.
I also want to throw in real quick, if I can, that Heather Langenkamp I really love, but I always see her as a survivor and not as, or a final girl.
Yes.
As opposed to a scream queen.
Yes. And you know,
she survives. She takes matters into her own hands as opposed to just standing there screaming. Because when I think of scream queens, I just think of victims.
Uh-huh. It's interesting, too, because I was thinking about, like, if you took Nancy out of Nightmare on Elm Street and switched her with Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween as Laurie, mm-hmm. They're very similar characters, and I would be curious to see how each character would operate in the other's time period, which really is only a few years. I mean, it's only like 6 years difference, but to me, they're very similar from two different decades, but they're very similar. Yeah. And it would be very curious to see, because I think both of them would respond very similarly in those films.
I might be raked over the coals for this, but I would say that her character devolved from when you're talking about Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode, from Halloween 1 to Halloween 2. I think Halloween 1, she was incredibly capable and very proactive in terms of protecting herself and protecting the kids and just surviving. Whereas when she's in the hospital, she's just basically running around and screaming.
Yeah, I know. That always kind of bugged me.
Yeah.
Because it's true, right? It's like she did. She went. She put the kids. You know, she puts the kids' lives ahead of hers. She's doing everything she can to protect them from this maniac. She's fighting for her life. It all happens so quickly, right? I mean, because you think about like going back to like Nancy, right? In Nightmare on Elm Street, she's going from like putting this mystery together and preparing for the inevitable confrontation.
Right.
Whereas with Laurie,
and she had time to read a survival book.
Exactly, right? And Laurie, in the meantime, is just living her... I mean, it would be like any of us, right? We're living our lives. This movie's going on outside her window, so she doesn't, you know, across the street, she doesn't even know about. And then within a matter of just walking across the street, she's thrusted into this insanity of her friends mm-hmm. are dead. Her, you know, you have, you know, Judith Myers tombstone on the bed. I mean, all of a sudden,
no,
it's like
small feet for shock value.
Yeah, and it's like, and now she's, you know, she's got a knife thrusted in her arm, and it's like falling out down the stairs. I mean, it's like, and the fact that she was able to do what she did in the last like 10 minutes of that film is incredible. I don't know if Laurie ever gets the credit she deserves for that.
Not to dwell too much on this, but I got to say, if you have to encapsulate all of her character's resourcefulness, it has to be that moment when she's hiding in the closet and Michael Myers is just bashing in the flimsiest of closets, and she manages to have the wherewithal to grab, not only grab a hanger, but straighten it and jab it directly into his eye and fend off this killer. Is one of the greatest moments in cinema, as far as I'm concerned, because you're a helpless victim along with her watching it, and you're like, this is it. She's dead.
Yeah.
She's dead. And she gets out of it, and that's how she does it. And I always, I'm like, wow, I'm not sure if I'd be capable of that.
Ben Scrivens is the owner of Fright Rags and was one of the many people that were interviewed for the In Search of Darkness series. In fact, he was actually the first person to be interviewed for the documentary. In this outtake, I asked him how he was approached about being in the documentary, and we went down the 1980s rabbit hole. You were one of the people interviewed for the In Search of Darkness films. How did they reach out to you?
It's funny, Robin, who created this series, reached out to me. He's like, listen, I'm thinking about doing this horror documentary series. You were the first person I thought of. Would you be interested in being a part of it? I'm like, yeah, that's cool. And he's in the UK. And I didn't, you know, I get requests for certain things sometimes, like, you know, whether it's, you know, obviously like being on a podcast or being interviewed or whatever, which is awesome. And I'm always like happy to do it. Like, if someone wants to talk to me, cool. I'm down. But I was like, okay. And I started seeing what he was doing. I'm like, oh, this is like legit. And he's like, no, I want to come and interview you. And I'm like, well, he's like, well, I'm going to be in New York. I'm like, that's great. But I just want to let you know, even though I'm in New York, I'm not in New York City. I'm 6 hours north of New York City. Like, I'm not, like, I understand he's in the UK. He might not get the geography.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, don't worry. I'm going to take a train up there. And I'm like, oh. So, like, I literally picked him up from the train station. We went back to the office. It was, like, on a Sunday. Hung out and did the interview. And then we had dinner. And then I dropped him back off the train station. And he is such – honestly, to see what he's done with that documentary, who he's gotten on it, and the content alone is incredible. Like, and they just announced the third one for In Search of Darkness. I'm like, this is
– I know.
These are, like, Bibles for, you know, the 80s horror. It's amazing.
Is it incredible? I mean, I sit back and I look at that time period and I go – you know, I mean, I was a teenager, you know, at that time, you know, I wasn't really thinking about what it was like at that time when you're living it. You're not thinking about, oh, wow, sure, what a really cool time. I mean, look, not everything about the 80s was great. I mean, there was a lot of serious
right.
stuff going on that we kind of sweep under the rug every so often. We tend to look at the good stuff, which is great, but it was a fun decade. For some people, it was kind of crazy fun and dangerous. But for those of us that were growing up at that time, I think it was an eye-opening experience because, like, I remember watching music videos and seeing, like, I always remember thinking about England from seeing all the British artists doing the music videos over in England. I'm like, oh, wow. I'm like kind of like traveling to England right now, seeing what England looks like. Or, you know, like watching cable TV and finding all these different channels from like Philadelphia or Boston. You know, I was a Jersey guy. So I'm like, I you know, I don't know what are they watching, different things that we're seeing? Like, what is it? You know, different shows. But videos and home video. I mean, for you, what was it like being able to have that kind of access at that time? Obviously, now we have access to everything everywhere at all times. But I mean, for that time, what do you think the differences were? I mean, obviously, now we have everything that we can just call up on YouTube or any site. But I mean, at that point, thinking about that time period, going to the video stores, what do you think about that? Like, when you look back at those times?
Oddly enough, I think about this type of thing probably more than I should. I don't know. I always go back to that. But I think it was, to me, it's almost like we had to live within limitations. Like, okay, we might have had, there might have been 100 horror movies to choose from, you know, on the wall. And that's a lot, right? That's a ton of movies. But you only had $2.14 to get one film, right? Like, at least for me, you know?
Yeah.
And you had, and even the tapes that I had as a kid, you know, the ones that you tape the bootleg off another VCR or, you know, whatever, you tape off TV. I only had a handful. So you end up watching certain films over and over and over again. And you live and breathe those films in a way that today I feel like we are gone so far the other way that as soon as a new movie comes out, it's old news by Monday if it came out on Friday, and you're on to the next thing. And I don't find myself necessarily rewatching newer films all the time. And I think that can be a hindrance. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 20 years. Maybe my kids will look back on this age and go, man, it was so great or whatever. But for me, being in my, you know, mid 40s now, it's like, I don't know. It's great. Listen, there's a lot of great films, and I love the fact that there's so many new and different things all the time, and from different voices, you know, and different culture. I think it's incredible. But I guess I worry, like, we look back at, you know, Return of the Living Dead as a classic because it was such a crazy movie at a time. But if that had come out today and it was just sort of like steamrolled over by other films, because we have five films coming out every day, I don't know if it would have had the staying power, you know, just as an example. So I think, yeah, there's movies that poke through now. But back then, I think we were just bound by certain limitations that I think, I don't know. And again, this is probably, you know, aging me talking, but that was a good thing. You know? Like, look at it as a good thing.
Yeah, it's funny because I've been doing the same thing, and I kind of do that whole thing too. Is it like because I'm just getting older? Am I becoming that guy on the porch? Get off my lawn.
Exactly.
But I'm looking at it and I'm like, well, look, I mean, there's a lot about this time period that's awesome. I mean, there really is. But there's also a lot about this time period where I go, you know, like, I won't get into like the electronic leash of the phones and all that stuff. But but going back to your point, which is like, yeah, you went to a video store. This is what you had. And you had to make a selection. And it went from being like, oh, man, I'd love to see a Batman movie one day. Now it's like, I don't know if I want to see another Batman movie or another superhero movie today, because there are just so many now.
Yeah.
And it's like there are just so many movies. Like you're saying, there's like five movies coming out every day. We've gone to the point now from where it's like, oh, we would like to have more, to, oh, my God, we have way too much material out there. Every streaming service now has their own individual shows on top of everything else. And it's just like there's no, I don't have enough hours in my life to go through all this stuff.
Well, I think that's part of the issue. Like the experience of going to the video store and, you know, having your parents drive you there, or in, you know, my case, I would ride my bike or whatever, and I would stand in front of that wall, and yes, it would take me probably half an hour, but then you check out. And once you've made that decision, you're married to that decision. You have to walk home or get home and watch it. I think now we're sitting on our couch, and like you just said, you pop on Netflix, you're scrolling for 10 minutes. I don't know if maybe I don't know if that one. And then you go to over to HBO Max or Paramount Plus or Peacock or, you know, Hulu. And there's literally 10,000. It's the paralysis of analysis. Yeah. And you're literally trying to figure out how to spend the next 2 hours of your life. I do that in front of my DVDs all the time, but it's a little different. It's just too much. Yeah. And it's very hard to know what to choose when, because you're constantly judging what your choices are going to be. It's a weird thing.
Ironically, Robin Block was my guest on the next podcast that followed Ben's. Robin, of course, is the creator and producer of the In Search of Darkness series, as well as the upcoming In Search of Tomorrow documentary. In this outtake, I had mentioned to Robin that Ben was on the previous show, and here was what he had to say. So lately, I've been having on the program business owners, entrepreneurs. I had Ben Scrivens on my last podcast.
Love Ben. Here's a story about Ben. When I decided I was going to do this, I was looking around for brands in the horror space that I really liked. And Fright Rags was just awesome from a sort of just a purely marketing purview. They were really impressive. And this is a true story. Ben Scrivens was the first person I called. Like when you first pick up that phone to pitch an idea, he was the first person I ever spoke to about In Search of Darkness.
Wow.
And I went to visit him because I filmed the interview with him in Rochester. And they have the most amazing setup at Fright Rags. Their offices are actually in an old morgue.
I didn't know.
it was a morgue, right? And they've turned it into this amazing kind of merchandising factory. And you go in and you can just like, it's, I'm sure I just filmed the lobby because you've got all these hundreds of VHSs and costumes and figurines and like, and Ben's the real deal. He is like a good guy. And he hooked me up with a few people. I had the honor of collaborating with Fright Rags on part two. We did a collector's edition with them. I rarely wear the t-shirt that they created because it's so nice. I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah.
But you know, that's, I learned a lot from working with him. He's the real deal. So I'm a huge fan of Ben.
Maxi Contenti is the director and co-writer of the film The Last Matinee, which is a story about a killer murdering people in a movie theater during a rainstorm. In this outtake, I had asked Max about a scene early in the film that caught my attention. The scene in the very beginning when you have the father and the daughter talking about working as a film projectionist. It's so detailed and so interesting. I was wondering, is that something that you had done previously, or did you know somebody who did that? Because it's very detailed, and it's such, it feels like such an incredibly real conversation that maybe you were either a part of or had sat in on.
Okay. Yeah. I knew, well, actually, well, something that that location had for a long time was, it was used by the Uruguayan Cinemateca, which is like art house theaters, very, very much a cultural thing. They're really cool. They have the best. Right now, they moved and made new theaters for the Cinemateca, and it they're great. But they had this movie theater house rented for years, and I knew, and I went. They do festivals, and they have like a film school that I went, and so I went to that projection booth many times. I knew projectionists and all that, but and for the projection part, we did a little bit of training with the actors, a little bit. Some expert came and we worked a little bit that out. But the rest was acting. The projection, the projector was actually working. We made it work for real. So the one you see and you hear, it's the real one. The rest is just acting and just, you know. Yeah. It was actually more. It was much longer. There's a 1 minute longer cut of that scene. They talk about different plates, you mm-hmm. know, projection plates, yep. Yeah. and formats. Gets too nerdy, and but it's gonna be in some extras when it comes out on Blu-ray.
Nathan Crooker is the producer and creator of the film Isolation, which is an anthology film that takes place in the future during a global pandemic. Sound familiar? This film contains 9 stories told by 11 directors, and in this outtake, I asked Nathan if there were any concerns about having flexibility in reorganizing the order of the stories in which they appeared in the film. Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, anthology movies to me are kind of like a baseball lineup, right? Like you want to create the different beats and, you know, which story is the leadoff hitter, which one's going to be the cleanup hitter, you know, who's going to be the number 8 and 9, kind of take you home. So, I mean, and what is also interesting with your film is that even though the stories aren't directly related, a couple of them kind of throw back a little bit to what you just saw in just a throwaway line here and there. So were you concerned that maybe, oh, if this story mentions a little bit from that story, you're kind of tied into it a little bit. Was there a little concern about that too?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it concern. I mean, I always had the idea that I want to tie them together. And I've, you know, we've all seen anthologies where anthologies do it the best. But, you know, we've seen them where sort of the wrapper, if you will, or the connective tissue all of a sudden takes on a life of its own. And I think VHS does that really well. But, you know, I didn't want that to overshadow the films that were being made. I didn't want to make another movie on top of everything else, because then I was like, okay, that might feel really long. Or it might take away the thunder of these other stories, or it could not be as great as these stories. So I was like, let's just do something simple that gets us, it keeps us moving. So in each of the films, there's a callback to every other, there's a callback to a film or a call forward to a film. And, you know, Larry sets it up perfectly because he talks about how he's one story among many. Right. So we start off there and then we go into 5G. Right at the beginning of 5G, you guys watching TV and it's talking about how these people are fleeing to, you know, New York homes upstate. And obviously 5G, as you see later, relates to the other conspiracy theory one that takes place in the UK. And each one, whether it's a visual reference or not, it has a callback, like I said, either on the television or somebody says something or it's on the radio. So, you know, going back and watching it again, if someone was to and they didn't pick it up, they'd be like, oh, right. In the Meatheads one, it's talking about what's happening in El Paso, you know, 3 movies later. What ended up happening was I had had that all in there, and I thought James and I, my producer partner James Gannon, we thought we knew the order that we wanted, and then we got the stories, like I said, and we had to move them around. So I had to ask the directors, some of them, to reshoot some stuff or re-record certain things so that that connective tissue actually fit.
George Romero is a filmmaker who had a great influence on me when I was studying film and learning to make my own movies. So it was an honor to have his widow, Suzanne Dedroche Romero, on the podcast. She's the president and founder of the George A. Romero Foundation, which not only keeps the Romero legacy alive, but also looks to assist future filmmakers as well. Mrs. Romero was kind enough to join me on the podcast, and we discussed the recent release of The Amusement Park, George Romero's zombie movies, of course. And in this outtake, Mrs. Romero was kind enough to relate a story of when she first met George Romero.
Well, and here's another story. So I met him. I was a bartender at the Marriott, which is where he was staying during his gig for Land of the Dead. And he was doing post. And a friend of mine said, oh, my, because he was the stunt coordinator on Land. And he said, oh, you know who's in the house? And I went, oh, my God, I know John Leguizamo. I'm so excited. He goes, no, bigger than John Leguizamo. And I thought, okay. And then he says, it's George Romero. And, of course, I didn't know who he was. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't know who that guy is, but whatever. And so I met George, and I said, oh, small world, my friend worked on your film. And so he invites me to see the rough cut of Land of the Dead in his hotel room. With my friend, Matt. And I was really nervous about it because I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to think this is trash. It's going to be garbage, and I'm going to need to say it, but I need to be polite. I mean, it's a hard sort of path to navigate. So I see the film, and the film ends, and he shuts it down. He goes, so what did you think? I was like, well, actually, it wasn't that bad. And he laughed that laugh, a huge roar. And obviously, like I said, he knew that I wasn't really the person that he makes these movies for. But, you know, he was flattered that I thought it wasn't that bad. So I think that when I said that I didn't think Dawn was wonderful, you know, he took it as, you know, it's subjective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I highly recommend you check out the George A. Romero Foundation's website to learn more about the man, his films, and how the foundation looks to assist future filmmakers. You can learn more at georgearomerofoundation.org for more details. And if you're able to assist with a donation, I know everyone there would greatly appreciate it. All right. Well, that might do it for Outtakes with my guests. But of course, there is a little bit of meat left on this bone. Last year, I thought it would be fun to include some outtakes of myself goofing up when recording the show. And it seemed to go over well. So let's do it again this year. All right, here we go. Me making a complete fool of myself. Cue the silly music. And it's time to... Oh, wow. There we go. In the meantime, as you hear in the background, a new grave is being dug. And when that happens, that means my guest has arrived. And it's time... Wow, hello. You think I've done this once or twice before. All right, try it again. 3, 2, 1. And as you can hear in the background, a new grave is being added. A new grave... And as you can hear, this is the easiest thing in the world. Why am I having such a hard time doing this? Okay. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. As you hear in the background, a new grave is being dug. And when that happens, that means... Man, I am having a problem today. All right, 3, 2, 1. And as you can hear in the background, a new grave is being dug. And when that happens, that means my guest has arrived. Oh, my gosh. And as you can hear in the background, a new grave is being dug. And when that happens, that can only... What is wrong with me? Also available on March...
Thank you very much for having me. Great to be here.
Oh, well, thanks, Stephen. It's good to have you here. I'm recording over everything I just did. That was great. Oh, that was great. Evan... Up, oh, no, he hung up on me. Don't hang up. About being in the documentary and approached about being in the documentary. approached about being in the documentary. This is gotta be kidding me. Nathan Crooker is the producer and creator of the film Isolation, which is an anthology film that plays. I can't type. Sorry, let's try that again. What was wrong with me last night?
It's in that place.
Exactly. That takes. You see, I'm like Ron Burgundy. I just read what's up. I just what's there. Oh boy. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. I'm just a dope. Yes. There you go. Okay, let's move on. As I begin to close down the graveyard, I just wanted to remind you that the latest GYS classic is currently available, and it's the second time that film professor Christopher Sharrett joined me on the show to discuss the theory of the couple and sexuality in the original Dracula, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, and we also get into scanners and what the scanners represent. So GYS 5 is currently up, so check that out. And 4, Professor Sharrett joined me to talk about the theory of the other in horror movies. Now, there's going to be one more upload before the end of the year, and that's going to be Graveyard Show Classic number 6. And it's going to be uploaded in its original and unedited version. It's podcast number 36 from the original version of the Graveyard Show podcast, and it comes to us from September 10th, 2009. My guest for that show was Paul Sollett, who is the writer and the director of the film Grace. Now, this show is significant in the Graveyard Show podcast's history because it was going to be my final podcast for a while, as I had decided to step away from the show due to family health issues. Now, remember, at that time, the Graveyard Show was a weekly podcast. I just couldn't keep doing it while important matters needed to be handled. So on that show, I announced that the Graveyard Show podcast was going to be handed over to Rich Peterson from Madison Horror and the Bordello of Horror, and he was going to produce and host the show in my absence. So Graveyard Show Classic number 6 is going to be available before the end of the year, and obviously will be available everywhere you hear the Graveyard Show podcast. So if you subscribe to the show, it will just appear as soon as it's uploaded and ready to go. You don't need to go anywhere else to find it. Listening to that show, I could certainly hear the exhaustion and the stress in my voice at that time. It's certainly a great reminder why I decided to do this new version of the show on a much lighter schedule. A reminder that you can catch the Graveyard Show podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere podcasts exist. And you can also catch the Graveyard Show podcast on YouTube. And this brings me back to a point I'd made earlier. On the Graveyard Show podcast's YouTube channel, you can find the YouTube-exclusive show Catacombs of Horror. It's a video podcast that I produce just for YouTube. And that's where you can catch the show that I had mentioned David Weiner joined me on. And the second episode that you can find on there is about my favorite scenes from the vampire film Count Yorga Vampire. That one is getting a lot of attention. And people are really commenting and really finding it. And I'm really happy to see that it's getting the really positive reception that it's getting. Count Yorga Vampire, I think, is a forgotten great film that if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's really, I think it'll be worth your time. All right. So as I wrap up my first full year of doing original interviews, I have to do a bunch of thank yous. First, I have to thank all my guests that came on the show. I felt like I made new friends, and I appreciate them taking the time to spend with me to talk about their projects. Sometimes these interviews can go 20 minutes, and we start at 20, and then we usually end up 45 to an hour in. So I really appreciate them, all of them coming on the show this year. It was great meeting new friends, and I look forward to having all of them back on the program in the future. I know already a few of them will be joining me in 2022. I think you know who a few of those people will be. I also have to thank everyone at Katrina Juan PR. Second year we've worked together. And again, everyone there has been doing an amazing job getting me interviews and sending me information as well. So thank you, everyone at Katrina Juan PR. I also have to thank the folks at Falco Inc., brand new team that I'm working with over there, and they've been sending me information on projects as well as helping get some interviews for the program. So I want to thank everybody over at Falco Inc. as well. Of course, I have to thank my wife, Mrs. Caretaker, for all of her help and support. Honey, I love you. Could not do this show without you. at all. She means the world to me. So it's great to have her support with this podcast. And of course, finally, I have to thank all of you out there for listening and supporting the show. Look, I know that there are a bunch of podcasting choices out there. Between podcasts, the YouTube channels, everything else, there is a ton of material out there. So having you spend time with me here in the graveyard does mean a whole lot. I really want to thank all of you for finding the program and spreading the word. And again, if you know anyone who's a big fan of horror or just horror interviews or just interviews, even for that matter, please send them this way. I cannot thank all of you enough out there for spreading the word. And it's been a successful 2021. This has been great. I've had a fun time doing this now a full year back, scheduling interviews and doing original shows. I know I made the right choice bringing the podcast back and doing it in a much less stressed schedule to do everything. So it's best for all of us. I also want to wish everyone out there a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy fill in the blank holiday that you're celebrating in the month of December. Have fun, stay safe. Please be careful out there, and I look forward to having you all back listening to the show in 2022. All right, well, that's going to do it. GYS Classic number 6 will be uploaded very soon to end out the year. But as far as original programs, this will take us out until 2022. So, my friends, take care of yourselves. Have a great holiday season. And as I always like to remind you, as you exit the graveyard, I would like to remind you to please lock the gate behind you. We wouldn't want anyone to get out. Happy New Year, everybody.